I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, early voting for the San Antonio municipal runoff election begins today. If you didn't get to vote in the May election, you can still vote in the runoff, and your vote is necessary. The runoff election day is June 7th. TPR's The Source is hosting live debates with the candidates for the four unresolved city council races, District 1, 6, 8, and 9, also for the mayor's race. And today we're drilling down on District 8. We're joined by the two candidates, Evalice Mesa-Gonzalez and Paula McGee. Both candidates are here to answer your questions. This is a community conversation, and we want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio's municipal runoff election begins today. Today's the first day of early voting. It runs through Tuesday, June 3rd, and Election Day is Saturday, June 7th. If you didn't vote in May, you can still vote in the runoff election. There are four unresolved city council races and the mayor's race, and TPR's The Source has been hosting live on-air debates for all those races. And today we have the runoff candidates for District 8. This is an area located on the city's far northwest side, encompasses key areas such as South Texas Medical Center, the University of Texas at San Antonio main campus, and the Shops at La Cantera. The district is characterized by rapid growth, diverse neighborhoods, and a significant economic activity. This is a pivotal area for the city. And the question before District 8 voters is who will represent them, Evalice Mesa-Gonzalez or Paula McGee. Both are with us in studio today, and they're going to take your questions. The objective of the hour is to have a civil exchange of ideas and solutions that helps the listener voter understand which candidate best represents their views and priorities. Candidates are encouraged to talk about themselves and their own vision for San Antonio. Candidates who try to disparage the other candidate or characterize their positions will be redirected on the air, and their time will be cut, and the opponent will be given an opportunity to respond. And we're going to be taking calls from listeners. These calls are screened, and the callers are prompted to ask open-ended, issue-focused questions that are available to be answered by both candidates. Our format, we have two-minute opening statements. We go to question and answers, and the candidates each have 2 minutes to respond. The answers are timed. The candidate, if they exceed that time, we have a bell that we can ring, and the candidates alternate on being first to answer the questions. And then we have a one-minute closing statement. We did flip a coin earlier to establish who will go first with the opening statements, and that will be Evalice Mesa-Gonzalez, and you have 2 minutes.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here today. Again, my name is Evalice Mesa-Gonzalez, candidate for City Council District 8. I'm born and raised here in San Antonio, and for the last 15 years, my husband and I have been raising our family in District 8. I love the city that I was raised in, and I love the district that I'm raising my kids in. I'm running for City Council because I want to make sure that District 8 continues to be a safe and prosperous place for families and residents. A place that we are supporting our seniors, advancing public safety, fostering economic growth for our small businesses, and enhancing our parks and infrastructure. Doing all that while watching how we spend our property tax dollars, making sure we're spending those dollars wisely and that residents are confident with the money, how we're spending that. District 8 has a tradition of strong leadership, and I want to continue that tradition and get to work on day one for the residents of District 8. Thank you so much.
All right, and now we have 2 minutes for opening statement for Paula McGee.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be here. Paula McGee, and I'm running for City Council in District 8, and I am looking forward to serving the citizens and businesses in this great district, which is a really diverse one. This is the first time in 8 years in District 8 that we have a real opportunity for real change, and that's what I bring. I have a lifetime of real-world experience. I have been a lawyer for 40 years. I've been a volunteer in our community, serving on the city's Zoning Commission and Ethics Review Board, also Alamo College's Foundation Board. But I am an outsider from City Hall. I have a business perspective. And this is all about public service for me. I want to serve the city that has been home to us for almost 40 years and meant so much to us. And I think that we agree that public safety is a critical issue, for a first priority, really, within District 8. That's what I've heard from neighbors throughout the community. They're also concerned about the amount of growth in our district, and so infrastructure and streets and drainage are of critical importance, but also that it is important that our city be better stewards of our tax dollars. And so transparency and accountability in the use of city dollars is an important motivator for me in this run to serve the folks in District 8. And I look forward to doing that. And I'm glad to be here today to have this conversation.
All right. So here we go to the question and answer part of our presentation here. And Paula McGee, you have 2 minutes. I want to ask you a little bit more about public safety. What does public safety mean to you? Because it is a big, huge umbrella term. It encompasses everything from fire protection to domestic violence to, gun violence. I know that a big crime that we have in District 8 is a lot of car break-ins. Yes. I hate it when it happens to me, but it is a non-violent crime. But, and the police sometimes wonder, how do we deal with this? And a lot of people aren't satisfied by the response to that. So tell me more about what you want. What do you mean when you say public safety?
Well, that's a great question. And I do believe that that is a priority. That's what I've heard out in the communities with folks, that no matter what we might hear in the press, that that crime is not on the rise. I think people do feel less safe than they used to. And so for me, public safety encompasses fire, police, EMS, all of those aspects within our city. But it also includes the ability of residents to also take ownership for themselves, for their personal safety. So I prioritize and think that we need to make sure that our first responders have the sufficient resources, personnel, equipment, facilities, in order to be able to keep themselves safe and keep our residents safe. But I do think that we also need to be looking into the types of crimes that we have in District 8 may be different from neighborhood to neighborhood and across the district, and different in 8 from other places. But nonetheless, they are important to our residents. Property crimes are important to our residents. And so I've heard lots of people talking about car break-ins in their neighborhood where they haven't had those in the past, and mail theft in the middle of broad daylight out of their community mailboxes, car break-ins out in the retail shopping areas. And so I do think that we need to be mindful of what those issues look like, and make sure that we're using our resources in the best way possible to efficiently address them.
All right. And now to Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez. You have 2 minutes to talk about. Let's go in a little depth and detail, break down what you mean by when you talk about public safety.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I'm proud to be endorsed by the San Antonio Police Officers Association and our Firefighter Association. Those endorsements mean a lot to me. And so for me, public safety really is, like you said, it encompasses a lot. We're a big city, so it's property crime. In District 8 specifically, we deal with property crime. Mailbox theft just happens regularly with those mailboxes that are kind of that one-stop for neighborhoods. Domestic violence is happening all over the city, right? And so we can't look away from any of those things, because residents want to feel safe at the end of the day. And that means that our department should have the infrastructure they need, the personnel, the resources they need to protect themselves as officers and first responders, but also be able to answer the call when it comes in. I was fortunate to do a Citizens on Patrol training back in February. With that training, did a ride along with one of the officers. So I did a B shift from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. And so sat in the car and got to kind of get a day in the life of this officer who'd been on the who'd been an officer for 4 years. And just the calls that they had, whether they're alarm calls or an accident, all of those were important for me to see just firsthand what exactly officers deal with on a typical shift in District 8. So for me, it's about making sure we have those patrol officers and making sure our response time is down, right? That's what folks want. When they call 911, they want an officer there quickly. This is could be a life or death situation, an emergency for sure. So that's important that residents feel that safety.
All right, let's go to our phone lines. We have some callers calling in with questions. You can call in with your question for the candidates, Evalise Meza-Gonzalez and Paula McGee. These are the two runoff candidates for District 8. Call in at 833-877-8255. And let's go to George. And George, hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm kind of confused about Project Marvel. You know, we hear a lot about it, but we don't hear as much about how it's funded or who funds it. And so I guess I was hoping you could explain, you know, each of your understanding about how Project Marvel could be funded.
All right. Thank you for the question, George. So let's go first to Evalise Meza-Gonzalez. Tell us what your understanding is on how Project Marvel will be funded. And this is the Spurs Arena and also the vast entertainment district that's being planned around it.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, George. So as I know it, and I actually went, our councilman in District 8 had a forum for Project Marvel and had city staff there to explain it all. So Project Marvel to me will not be on a ballot as Project Marvel, right? And I think that's important for folks to understand when they go to vote on this item. It's not going to, you don't look for the words Project Marvel. I understand there's a number of funding mechanisms that are being discussed right now, from venue tax to hotel tax dollars used to renovate the convention center, and I believe the Alamo Dome. There's also bond dollars that get used, right, for the infrastructure for Project Marvel. So that's how I understand it. I know last week council members voted to expand the use of their PFZ, I believe it's called, to include a stadium of some sort. So I know that that's part of the discussion. And again, there's a number of funding mechanisms. Some are required. There's a public vote that is required, you know, like a venue tax or a bond. Those go out to the voters, right? There's others that don't necessarily require a public vote. But all of those are important for residents to know exactly what they're voting for as a public, but also what your council members essentially have a vote on, right? So that's really the priority for me and Project Marvel, is making sure District 8 residents understand fully what this project is and what it isn't, right?
All right, and now 2 minutes to Paula McGee. What do you understand about the funding that's being proposed for Project Marvel?
Well, thank you for that question, George. That is one of the most common questions that I hear out in the community is, what about Project Marvel? Are you for it or are you against it? So it is certainly a topic of conversation, as it should be, because it has a big price tag for our community. Also, it has a big vision for the future of downtown. So my understanding is that it is a very complicated collection of funding sources for different parts of the project. And so part of the confusion, I think, out in the public right at the moment and amongst people as they're talking is this multitude of funding sources: hotel occupancy tax, venue taxes, private funding, the PFC zone, the bonds, all of it. And it all gets those different baskets of funding can apply to different parts of this project. It's not just the Spurs Arena, and I think some people fail to realize the scope of this. This is a project that would roll out over about 15 years, so it is a very large project, but way more than just the Spurs Arena, and way more opportunity for economic development in downtown, which is really needed. My red line on this is that I do not want there to be a burden on our taxpayers to pay for Project Marvel. parts of this will require taxpayer approval. But my approach to this when I get in office is going to be to dig deeply into the facts and understand the complexities of the funding mechanisms and communicate those to District 8.
All right, let's go to another call from our listeners, and we have Betty. And Betty, you're on the air, and Paula McGee will be first to answer your question.
Hi, I'm curious what experience you have that makes you prepared to lead such a big city.
All right, thank you for that question, Betty. So, Paula McGee, tell us about your experience and how would that be beneficial as a city council person for District 8?
Thank you, Betty. I think that is a great question and one that all voters in District 8 should be asking is about what leads either of us to have the experience necessary to do this job and do it well on behalf of the taxpayers in District 8. I have a lifetime of experience. I've been a lawyer for 40 years. I worked initially in my career as a business and corporate lawyer doing a lot of banking work and bond work. So I have experience with complicated funding transactions and a lot of experience negotiating complex issues like that. So that what I would draw from. I've also been involved in the community as a volunteer, as many people have. I have volunteered within the city on the zoning commission, and I think that experience will be particularly helpful as a council representative because there are many issues related to development and challenges of growth within District 8, and I would draw from that time and on the zoning commission. I served on the Ethics Review Board for several years as well. So I approached this job from a position of ethics and honesty and transparency. I think we expect that from our public servants. And beyond that, I have been a longtime resident of the city of San Antonio, love the city, and am doing this out of a heart for public service in the community. So that's why I'm doing it, and those are my qualifications. Thank you for the question, Betty.
All right. Now, Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez, if you can talk 2 minutes for you to discuss your experience.
Sure. Thank you for that question, Betty. So my experience is most recently was in the mayor's office, had various roles there, served 4 years in the mayor's office, started as a policy advisor, and then worked my way up to a chief of staff. And that's where I spent the last 2 years of that time. And during that time really was the most pivotal moments in our city's history, managing a response to the pandemic. You might have seen our mayor and county judge on the air. We were in that studio for 366 days, making sure that residents were safe and that we could open back up as quickly as possible. Also helped manage our response to the winter storm. Our last 2020 put together the 2020 bond commission for the mayor. And then my last commission was on our redistricting, put that committee together for the mayor. These are, you know, happens with our census every 10 years. That's my recent experience. So really understand policy that was happening when I was in the mayor's office and that is still being discussed now, whether we're talking about our homelessness issues, economic development, we're talking about what else? Homelessness, economic development, we're talking about public safety, affordable housing. All of those issues are issues that we were dealing with when I was in the mayor's office and that the city still is. I also worked at the San Antonio River Authority during our river expansion projects. That was over 10 years ago when we expanded our rivers to the missions and to the museum reach. And that was really, to me, just a gold standard of how all of these agencies came together to work on something of that size and magnitude. So the benefits that it's given our city are great. So I really bring that government experience and understanding of local government and knowing how local government works.
All right. And now let's go to the next question. And from our listeners, this is going to be Sarah and Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez. You'll be going first with her question. And so, Sarah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I think homelessness is a really important issue in our community. So
So when you're elected, what will you do to help people that are experiencing homelessness?
All right, Sarah, thank you for that question. It was a little choppy there, but she was asking about what you can do for the community who is unhoused.
Yeah, thank you for that question, Sarah. You know, I think what we're doing for the unhoused population now, the city with the homeless strategic plan, that means that we've got a really big good partners, right? I don't think the city of San Antonio alone can do anything. I think this is a coordinated effort. I think most residents in District 8, I've talked to many of them, understand what is all encompassed when we talk about the unhoused community. Some is one resource. Some folks are one resource away from getting back on their feet. And other folks have, you know, chronic homelessness, right? So we need to make sure that we are working with our nonprofit partners that deal with this every single day. And as a city, how are we investing in our affordable housing stock? And that's something that we are continuing to do, making sure that we have all the mental health resources that are available that nonprofits are using, working with the county, UHS, I think is important when we talk about this. We also need beds. We need short-term beds for this population. It's best if folks are off of the street, right? Just to start from there. And that way we can start connecting to resources and, again, making sure those nonprofit partners are connected to them as well. Making sure encampments, right? That's become an issue in District 8. It happens all over the city. It's not immune to one district. And District 8 has their fair share of encampments. And that is unsafe for those that are living in them and obviously the neighborhoods, right? So want to make sure that those encampments are moved out. But ultimately that those folks are connecting to resources, because as quickly as we can get folks back to being productive members of our community, the better off we all are.
All right. And Paula McGee, if you could talk about what can be done to deal with the unhoused.
Well, thank you for that question, Sarah. I think that whenever any of us see any folks that appear to be unhoused and along the streets and homeless, I think it just does cause any of us to feel compassion for them individually. So I first want to say that I do think that the city of San Antonio is definitely a compassionate, caring city, and we do care about these folks. What I want to do, though, is I believe that we need a better strategy, a more holistic one. I know that there is a city department. We have Haven for Hope. There are a multitude of nonprofits that are providing compassionate care to connect folks that are homeless to services that they need and the help that they need in order to assist them with the underlying causes, perhaps, of why they even find themselves in that situation. But I don't think that our strategy throughout our community has been very effective. It doesn't appear to me, and I don't think it appears to others, that we're making any progress, because we all continue to see encampments. We all tend to see folks that are in need of help, and it is a complicated situation for people, and I think that we need to do a better job of trying to address the underlying causes for people that find themselves in a homeless situation and not just look for additional housing for them. I do think that addressing the mental health component for many folks that are in the homeless community is something that we really need to be serious about in San Antonio once and for all.
Well, let me ask a follow-up question adjacent to this issue that I've heard and I've seen in District 8. Seems to be it's a problem across the city, but I see it a lot in District 8, the panhandling situation. And the current city council member from District 8, whose term limited out, Manny Pelaez, he had adopted a strategy trying to promote don't give the panhandlers. He had put up some signs, and that got some blowback. So what do you see, Paula McGee, you know, the situation with panhandling? What can be done? They're trying to advise people instead give money to organizations that will help the people who are unhoused, or what do you want to do on that?
Well, that's a good question. I think that I have seen a reduction in panhandling as I drive around in District 8, but we do see it for sure. I don't agree with the current councilman's approach to putting up signs about that, because I do think people do feel compassion and want to help. But when I have heard our police chief speak on this topic, and even when I attended a Citizens on Patrol class, law enforcement does discourage people from giving money to panhandlers, because although the donor is wanting to try to assist them and provide help for them, what we're being told is that people do not use the money that's being given to them to meet their needs for food or whatever. They are misusing it and using it to buy drugs or alcohol, which are perpetuating their situation as being homeless. And so I think that it has been reduced. I do think that people should look to try to help those that are in that community in a different way, because I think what people are wanting to do with their donation is not being helpful at all in the end.
All right. And Evelise Meza-Gonzalez, if you can talk about the situation with panhandling, is it a problem? What can be done about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely do have that in our district. I'm near the Northwest Military and Wurzbach area, so there's plenty of panhandling that I've seen, Dezavala area as well. So making sure that residents feel safe ultimately, right? Because there's some situations where folks give money and roll the window down, and then one thing leads to another. I think somebody was recently even punched. I remember that story. So I think it's about just continuously educating the residents of District 8 about other resources that they could provide in other ways, whether we, you know, show them via social media, we educate in that way, we do that on our newsletter, you know, at every coffee with the councilman, you make sure to bring that up about the other ways that we could be helping our unhoused community. That's important. And then our officers, right? They definitely see that as a safety issue. And so in what way can our police officers, that department help in communicating that message out, I think is helpful, and what strategies they have that have worked and that we can continue doing.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're having a debate between the two runoff candidates for District 8, Evelise Meza-Gonzalez and Paula McGee. Early voting begins today. It runs through Tuesday, June 3rd. Election day is Saturday, June 7th. If you didn't get a chance to vote in the May general election, you can still vote in the runoff race, and your vote is needed. Let's go to our next caller question, and it would be with Hazel. And is that right, Hazel? Okay. And
yes, that's right.
Hi, Hazel. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say that I live in District 8, and I'm very concerned about all the construction, slowing down traffic, and just putting, like, others in me in danger of potential crashes from unpredictable, like, lane closures and changes. So I want to know what you're going to do to fix it.
All right, Hazel, thank you for that call. Because when we talk about public safety, it also includes traffic accidents. So you have 2 minutes to talk about what can be done to deal with this, you know, nonstop construction that's bad for small businesses. It's also bad for commuters. Evelise Gonzalez.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I mean, when you say Prue Road to anybody in District 8, everybody gasps, right? Everybody knows about that project. And I believe it started as a bond project and just took a very long time. It has gone through a lot, even in the 14 months that I've been campaigning in that area. Residents right outside Woodridge neighborhood has really seen that. Oak Hills Estates has also seen that project. And so for me, it's about making sure that residents really just know what construction projects are coming, not to know about it when they open their door, and to really have clear timelines from the city about when these projects are going to be completed. And we have I've been to a couple of these bond project meetings that they have. There's one off of George Road that is about to get started. And it was a bit too high level for me, in my opinion. I think there's just more opportunities. I think an opportunity like that, that's when you want to give as much detail as you can about the project, the purpose of the project, the money spent, who's in charge of it, the timeline of this project, and making sure that we are communicating that to residents every which way possible, right? Whether it's by text messages or newsletters, emails, anything like that. So for me, it's about making sure residents just really understand how we're spending that money. And construction projects are that like most tangible thing, right? That when you can see it, those are your dollars that are being spent. And so it affects you in that way, right? And not only because of it might be outside of your neighborhood, but it really is your money, right? So you got to make sure that we're spending that money in the right way and that the project is worth that time and money being spent.
All right, and Paula McGee, 2 minutes to discuss the situation with the construction messing up traffic.
Yes, Hazel, thank you for that question. I share your frustration over these construction projects that just seem to go on way too long, and just the hazards around driving through them, and just the frustration of how long it takes sometimes to get places and the changes in the paths based on where they are in their construction journey. I believe that there is a problem within our Public Works Department for the city of San Antonio. And so I think that there is a problem with oversight, with management, with accountability of these projects. And I am going to intentionally try to get to the bottom of that. I know that City Council recently has passed a resolution, I think, is going to look into Public Works, which is going to have a new director. But I think there's something more systemic that's a problem there, and we need to be a lot more efficient in the way that these projects proceed, and whether or not it's issues related to the contracts not having incentives for finishing on time and on budget, or disincentives for going on too long. I'm not really sure what the issue might be. I think it could be a lot of different things. But there are many projects in District 8 that seem to have been overlooked over time that need to be addressed. And so I want to be looking into the status of those projects and helping our neighborhoods get the help they need with respect to these stormwater projects that have been delayed, or low water crossings that have not been attended to. And also, residents do need to realize that streets are owned by the city. Some are not. So,
all right, let's go back to the phone line. So we have Daniel. Daniel, you're on the air, and Paula McGee will be answering your question first.
Hi, I was calling. I guess it would also kind of tie into the public safety. But, I mean, when you hear about these, like, either car wrecks or crimes and just general first responder type things, what would you do to decrease the response time of first responders in District 8?
All right. Thank you for that call, Daniel. So, Paula McGee, how do you speed up the response times?
Well, Daniel, that's a great question, because, of course, that is the important thing, right? If you have a situation, whether it's a car wreck or some type of an emergency, and you need a police officer there, you want him there as soon as possible. So response time is certainly critical in those types of situations. I do think that there are several things. One is, we all know that we need more police officers on the force. There is a question as to how many more we need, but the more that we can hire, the more that we can retain and keep on out on our streets and patrolling and working, the quicker those response times can be. As far as car wrecks and things like that, I do think that with respect to responding to those, sometimes that can be a traffic situation, but we certainly know that that we need to clear those accidents out of the roadway as quickly as possible too. So that is one thing. But concern about our delivery of public safety to our residents is key importance. And I think it turns on having them having the resources that they need to keep themselves safe and keep us safe. And that's going to turn, I believe, on increasing the number of officers that we have.
All right. And Evelise Meza-Gonzalez, what to do about traffic accidents and response times from first responders?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Daniel. So that's really the number one thing that folks talk about, or even the chief was at a District 8 town hall maybe about 3 or 4 months ago. And those are the two issues that he even focused on, is how do we bring that response time down, right? When you call 911, likely it's an emergency, could be life or death, but you want officers to be there quickly. And so we've got to make sure that our officers have the resources they need, the personnel that they need to answer these calls and really elevate those critical calls, right? And there's also, I think, ways too that I've seen, especially with our mental health unit, that's this kind of different specific department, specific set of officers that are managing those calls. And I think that's helpful for the officers that are on patrol, lessens maybe the calls that they are responding to. And so if there's any more strategic ways that we can do stuff like that, I think that's helpful. Whether we're talking about, you know, mailboxes or property crimes, how can we kind of divide those and separate them to make sure that officers are, set of officers is handling one type of call versus the others. I think increasing our officers is helpful because, again, I think folks want to feel safe. And they also, I think, want to know their safe officers more. Those are also patrol officers, and making sure that our safe officers, those are our neighborhood police officers, that they really are out in the neighborhoods. I know that they have a number of calls. While I was running, when I was campaigning and I was block walking, I remember referring a couple of officers just during that time. So that's important as well, to make sure that our safe officers have the resources that they need.
Recently, the Edwards Aquifer Authority announced that we are now in stage 5. We had some water come out of the sky yesterday. That was fantastic. But not enough. We're still going to be in stage 5. We're still in an exceptional drought. I know that there are many residents in District 8 that love their green lawns, the beautiful green lawns, but not so beautiful when we're in a drought. So what do you think, Evelise Meza-Gonzalez, what can we do to address our ongoing drought and encourage water conservation?
I mean, we just need to yell it at the rooftops, right? Water conservation conversation. I mean, honest, having conversations about water conservation, right? We've got to tell that to everybody as many times as possible. I know SAWS does their fair share of reminding folks about that, but council members, I think, have a role in doing that as well, and making sure that we are conserving our water during this time. I think SAWS, you know, that diversification of water resources that we have now is helpful during times like this. And so we also, the state, I know last session, passed a water infrastructure bill, and I believe they're in the midst of passing another one as well. If there's any ways that we can tap into that, there's been some recent articles in the paper about us losing water with just because we need new pipes, and it's happening in cities all across Texas. So we're not alone in that, but how we manage through that is something that we can be known for. So making sure that we have folks to repair those pipes and right the manpower to actually do the work. So that's important to me. But really, again, it's just making sure people really know water on those specific days that you're being that you can. Don't touch anything when you can't. And making sure that residents really understand that because this is serious. Stage 5 is serious, and residents just need to remember, and the elected needs to do their job of making sure that residents know that.
All right, and Paula McGee, stage 5, first time that's ever happened. What are your concerns about water conservation? How do we communicate that?
Well, it's a great question and of concern to all of us. I think it made that glorious rainstorm last night that excuse me, that came from the sky made it even better, knowing that that is something that we desperately need here. I think that conservation is really, water conservation is something that is actually a part of our community consciousness that we have had for many, many years because of our dependence upon the Edwards Aquifer. Our community has been very conscientious about conservation for a long, long time. Of course, we cannot conserve our way into water sufficiency. We do have a diversity of sources, but which is great and helpful, but we must continue to have that. The concern I have is that the loss of water within the SAWS system right now is equivalent to the amount of water that we are getting from the Vista Ridge pipeline. That is ridiculous that much water is being produced, that SAWS customers are paying for, and it's being lost within the pipes, within the 6,000 or so miles of pipes that SAWS manages. So that has got to be addressed ASAP. And I know SAWS is working on that, but it cannot happen fast enough. So as a community, we're asking our citizens to conserve, but we need SAWS to take that issue very seriously and work on that.
All right. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. And is it Michelle? Michelle, you're on the air and you're next, and Paula McGee will answer you first. So go right ahead.
Right. Thank you for taking my phone call. In the far northwest part of the district, we've had tremendous growth, especially in high-dense housing. But what we don't see at all is any development or promises of community spaces like parks. There are no soccer fields, tennis, public tennis courts, pickleball courts, basketball courts. And I feel like, to a certain extent, we bow down to these developments, but we have not reserved any land for public enjoyment and public use. And I wanted to know what the two candidates feel about that and if they have any plans or thoughts on how to further develop our community spaces, such as parks and rec areas.
All right, Michelle, thank you for the question. So more parks, recreational areas for District 8, and Paula McGee.
Michelle, thank you for that question. I think that is a great one because this is a perfect example of one of those core city services that our leaders need to get back to. And we need to be intentional about expanding these. I think it has the so many benefits. It is recreational. It is green spaces that we need more of. I've been driving around a lot in District 8, and there is a lot of concrete, a lot of development that's going on. And without an intentional preservation of grass areas and parks and public spaces, I completely agree with you, Michelle, that we need to be looking at the footprint of this entire district and setting aside. We have some great parks. Don't get me wrong. We do have some. We have Bonnie Connor Park. I mentioned her because she's endorsed me, but she has a beautiful park in District 8, which I'm proud of. But we need to do more to protect and preserve some spaces for families and residents to enjoy and not concrete over it, because we just were talking about water as well. And so when you have impervious cover and everything is concreted and we're building these, you know, multifamily communities, then we don't have those spaces where we can have green and trails and courts and pickleball courts and soccer fields like you're talking about. So I would want to be intentional about that in the next bond. Thank you.
All right. Evelise Meza-Gonzalez, parks for District 8.
Yeah, this is a great question. Thank you, Michelle. You know, you cannot say parks, you cannot talk about parks really without talking about District 8. We've got 27 parks in District 8, from those small pocket parks to our large parks like Friedrich Park, Eisenhower, and parts of Hardberger Park. So when we talk about parks, we absolutely have to be in that conversation. District 8 has to be part of that. And for me, I think it's about those community spaces, like you said. I've put this on a lot of on my mail pieces that you'll see in your mailboxes, but we are the only district without a community center. I learned that while I was on the campaign. And those community centers are so beneficial to residents, kids after school. You can activate a community center quickly in District 8. So I think a community center is needed. We have one senior center, our Bob Ross Senior Center in District 8. It was the first senior center ever built. I think that deserves a nice renovation. I think there's an opportunity to build in this next bond, a senior / community center where we have an intergenerational center for folks to use. A lot of District 8 residents, when I've talked to them, say that they use the Walker Ranch senior center. That is in District 9, and it is one of the newer senior centers that gets a lot of use. But that something like that can absolutely be done in District 8. I think if we add that community center and make it intergenerational, I think that really would be so unique and also so helpful to the kids and to our seniors that are in this community.
All right. And so, Evelise Meza-Gonzalez, there's a lot of growth happening in District 8. Some of the growth seems to be happening at a really fast pace, but not really managed. What role should the city play in helping manage the growth around UTSA and La Cantera, those areas?
Yeah, thank you for that question. It is absolutely happening. And I think it's about making sure that residents are at the table whenever we talk about any sort of development or growth. And those areas of District 8 are exactly where the growth is happening. We've got UTSA, La Cantera, the Rim, even we're all the way to Kyle Seal Road on 1604. So we're going to see that growth. I always say that Hills and Dales has had front row to watching all of that part of District 8 grow. And it's not going to stop anytime soon, especially with that merger that we have with UTSA and our UT Health system. And so really making sure that residents, again, are part of that conversation sooner than later to talk about making sure that the growth works according to them, right? Residents that have lived in the district for 20, 30, 40 years, even new residents and families that are starting there. So to me, it's about making sure that they're at the table and that project or development doesn't happen without a full understanding of what's going to happen and that residents can feel that they're part of that growth. Because the last thing anybody wants is you to wake up and all of a sudden you see something being built and you're going, hey, what was this? I never heard about it. That falls on the elected, and that would fall on me. So I want to make sure that we are letting residents know about all the growth that's coming, what we're hearing about as soon as we hear about it, and again, making sure that they're at the table for those conversations.
All right, and Paula McGee, 2 minutes to just talk about what the city can do to help manage growth and development so that it's beneficial for District 8.
That's a great question. Our district definitely is experiencing a lot of growth, and with this merger is going to just accelerate. I believe that we need a lot better long-term planning for what's going on here. To me, it seems that the growth appears to be a little haphazard and hasn't been really directed in a particularly strategic way. And so as I talk to neighbors and out in the community of District 8, there are a lot of stable, long-term, single-family residential neighborhoods that feel really impacted by the construction all around them, causing congestion on their roads and things like that. And so I do think that it is important to have a lot more communication. I would agree. Communication with the residents is a part of it, but also it needs to be a lot more directed and targeted, I think, with some intentionality. And it doesn't appear that that's been happening. So I was on the Zoning Commission for a while. I do think that maybe a review of our zoning rules and standards and our planning for the District 8 area would be something that I would want to look into. I'm not sure that it's happened in a while, and so I think that would be an important part of managing the growth and development in a better way.
Okay, we've reached the part where we do our closing statements. Each candidate will be getting 1 minute to close the deal and convince District 8 voters that they're the one that should represent you. We'll be hearing from both of our candidates, Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez and Paula McGee. Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez will be going first, and you have 1 minute.
Hi, thank you so much. For the residents in District 8 that are listening, I sincerely ask for your vote in this election. We have worked really hard talking to every resident possible, knocking on over 4,000 doors. We came into this runoff with a 2-to-1 lead, 40% of the vote. And I want folks to come back. I think they resonated. My vision for District 8 resonated with voters. I'm ready to get to work on day one for the residents of District 8. I want to make sure that District 8 continues to have a strong voice at City Hall. This district is way too important for that voice to not be strong. And so I ask for your vote. I'm ready to get to work, and I look forward to representing the residents of District 8. Thank you so much.
All right. And now, Paula McGee, you get the last word. 1 minute.
Thank you so much. It has been my pleasure to be here and participate in this conversation. It would be the honor of my life to represent the citizens and the businesses of District 8. I got into this race because I love this community. I care deeply about its future, and I think this is a very critical time that we elect leaders, true leaders, to lead our city forward with some of the challenges that we face. I believe the lifetime of real-world experience that I bring to this position is exceedingly needed at this point in our city, and I would be honored to represent District 8 citizens. I ask for your vote. I ask for all those that perhaps voted for one of the other candidates that I have reached out to. I ask that you would vote for Paula McGee and get out there and vote, San Antonio. Thank you.
All right. I want to thank both of our candidates for coming in studio today and are taking your questions and talking about their visions for San Antonio. San Antonio is at a crossroads right now. Your vote will decide which way we go. It is totally up to you. Our early voting has already started in San Antonio. It runs through Tuesday, June 3rd. Election day is Saturday, June 7th. If you did not vote in the May election, no worries. You can still vote in the runoff. And so we're counting on you to get out there and make a decision. Thank you both, Ivelisse Meza-Gonzalez and Paula McGee. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.